Interviews with the top professionals in business, economics, and finance in 20 minutes or less. It's fast, it's simple, it's the Benzinga Podcast. Welcome to the Benzinga Podcast. Today with me I have Jonathan Corpina. He is a senior managing partner at Meridian Equity Partners, president of the Independent Floor Brokers, an elected floor governor, and the current president of the Joseph Foundation, a foundation that focuses on improving the lives of children with traumatic brain injury. How are you doing today, Jonathan?
Hey, Seth, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good.
How are things in New York?
Good. You know, another beautiful sunny summer day here as we're getting through our summer, but all good.
Yeah, all right. So I just want to start off with what led you to pursue a career in finance?
You know what? I actually, when I was in college, I was studying law and pre-law,
mm-hmm.
And I always wanted to be a lawyer and get into politics. And somebody offered me an internship 1 year to come work down on the New York Stock Exchange. And at first I said, no, I didn't want it. But then I got advice from someone that said, listen, go take the internship. And if you don't enjoy it, then you know that the line in which you're pursuing as far as a career is concerned is something that you'll really want to do. So I came and I did an internship at the New York Stock Exchange, and I think I was here 2 or 3 days, and I said, wow, this is something I really want to do. And I went back to school my junior year and had to switch around a few of my courses to get out of politics and into, mm-hmm. and into finance.
Yeah, so looking back on that first time on the trading floor, can you kind of explain some of the emotions, some of the thoughts you had that day?
Yeah, I mean, clearly this is a real unique environment in every aspect of it. You know, if you think of the history of the building, if you think of the importance in our economy of the building, and just from a physical point of view, the way the room looks, the way it sounds, the optics of it, it's just a real interesting place, and I was just immediately attracted to it.
So it was a lot of the energy around the stock exchange that really attracted you to it?
Exactly. I mean, I couldn't think now about, you know, sitting behind a desk all day as opposed to, you know, running around on a trading floor. So it's even, you know, even the physical aspect of it was very attractive to me to try to pursue a career here.
So the way that trading is portrayed in the media with things like Wolf of Wall Street, do you think that's accurate, or do you think it's more sensationalizing trading in stocks today?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I mean, clearly the Wolf of Wall Street was based on a true story. So there is some, you know, accurate storylines that are there.
Yeah,
but I think also you know the media does like to embellish things a little bit. But the fact of the reality is, you know, when you're looking at the retail broker stories that we've all heard of and lived through in the past, when the rules and regulations weren't as tight as they are today, you know, clearly there were a handful of instances where the broker client relationship was abused.
So looking back at your career as a whole, could you just kind of point out a learning experience that you would take, and what did you learn from it?
I think something that you definitely learn from working in this environment and being here day in and day out is that you need to have a strong stomach and some thick skin. We're constantly making decisions throughout the day that are very important decisions, and you have to be prepared educational wise, and you have to be prepared mentally to make those decisions and stick by those decisions. And all the decisions that you make, they're all not going to be right. But when you are wrong, make sure you stand up and take responsibility for your actions. And I think that's something that I've learned throughout the years. You're not going to make every trade. You're not going to be on the right side of every single trade, but you better have a good reason why you made that decision. So make sure you're educated enough, prepared enough to make these decisions. And when you make a wrong decision, it's okay. Just be able to stand by it, take responsibility for it, and learn from it moving forward. And when you do make a bad decision, you can't hold on to it. You can't harp on it. If you make a bad trade, you decide to get out of that trade and move on to the next thing. And if you continue to think about that that bad trade, it's really gonna linger with you. You know, kind of like a baseball player. If you get up in a game and you strike out at the first at bat, when you get to that second at bat, you can't be thinking about, you know, how you struck out in that last one. You really need to be thinking about how am I going to approach this at bat. So putting bad decisions or putting bad trades behind you and moving forward, I think is an important learning lesson.
What is like one trade that you specifically remember? Like one bad trade that you specifically remember?
I remember one specific trade, and it wasn't a bad trade. I just made a real simple mistake. I had an order to buy 50,000 shares of Citigroup, and at this time, this was when the markets were really changing from paper to technology. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of doing a little bit of both at the time. So I remember I got a phone I had a phone order that was given to me to buy 50,000 shares of Citigroup, and I wrote it on paper. I went out, I executed it, I reported it back that you bought to the client that they bought 50,000 shares. Well, as soon as I hung up the phone and was walking away, 50,000 shares of Citi came into buy through my handheld computer. I was thinking this was a new order, but the customer was just sending me the electronic order that he should have sent in the first place. So I went out and I bought another 50,000 shares of Citi, and I called the client back and I said, all right, you bought another 50 Citigroup at whatever price it was, you know, makes a total of 100 on the day. Client said, what are you talking about? I said, well, you gave me 50 and now you gave me another 50. He goes, no, that was the first 50. I was just sending you the electronic format of it. So I had to immediately go out and sell 50,000 shares, and luckily for me, I got out at a very a price that was very close to where I bought it, but that's something that really could have been a disaster. So, you know, my learning lesson from that was always to, you know, confirm orders, repeat orders back to clients. If something doesn't look right, don't jump right into it. Make sure you're executing the right thing. But I specifically remember that trade.
Looking at the other side of things, what's a common factor you see in successful new companies like Uber, like Slack? What's something you look for in a successful new company?
I think you have to be very versatile, and being able to make some quick decisions, and being able to change along the way, right? So the world is changing, our economy is changing, technology is changing, customer needs are changing. So to be able to really make adjustments along the way. You have your primary goal. You know how you want to get from point A to point B, and from the start line to the finish line. But along the way, you're going to have to change things. Be willing to change things. And I think we've seen in some of these startup companies that have become very successful, that they've been able to make some small tweaks along the way that have really refined and made their product a superior product.
Shifting over to a more current look at things, this morning the big headline was Bank of England lowering their interest rates for the first time in 7 years from 0.5% to 0.25%. How do you see that affecting Americans and the global economy?
I kind of think that's the pattern that we've seen before, whether it's here domestically or international. Rates getting closer and closer to zero, unfortunately. I think from our point of view, from the U.S. point of view, we clearly have been looking at our economy, our economic data, and for the Fed to really make a decision as to when they are going to raise interest rates. The fact that Britain cut theirs, shouldn't come as a tremendous surprise, and as we see, the market really isn't reacting to it. We're relatively flat right now. But I think the more important issue, and the more important topic that we continually discuss is what's the Fed going to do with our interest rate situation? The Fed has discussed over time that they are extremely data dependent. They've waited for supporting data to show that our economy is getting stronger, is getting better, and can sustain a interest rate hike. So we saw one back in December, and our markets clearly were somewhat confused by it in a way. We knew it was going to happen, but you know, the market just didn't know how to react to it. And we saw some pretty good pressure on the markets January and February, with it rebounding very quickly right back to that starting point in March. So I think the Fed's been somewhat reluctant as to what they're going to do and when their next step is going to be. We've had different instances, you know, throughout this time since December to now, where the Fed has had the right indication points where they should be raising interest rates, but then you've got something that comes along like Brexit that gives them the opportunity to use that as an excuse to take a stand back and say, hold on, we need to wait a little while before we make our next move. And throughout this entire thing, we get closer and closer to a presidential election, and I think the Fed is going to, they're going to be forced into not making a decision anytime soon, just due to the fact that we're getting close to an election. So it's going to be, the next few months are going to be very interesting.
Yeah, so speaking about the presidential election, more of an unmentioned candidate is the third-party candidate, Gary Johnson. So one of the main things he wants to do is implement one large consumption tax. So like eliminating the IRS, eliminating income tax, just kind of clumping it all into one thing. How do you see that affecting the economy?
It's an idea that's been floated out there by other candidates in past elections. Clearly it hasn't gained any traction. I don't think our overall issue with our taxation is the policies and the manner in which we do so. I think it really just comes down to rates and finding the right rates for corporates and for individuals, for estates, for capital gains. It's important for us to find the right rate that works with our economy. I don't think changing the whole taxation process is going to be the solution to anything there.
So just some broad questions looking at the future. Where do you see the next bubble coming from?
Where do I see the next bubble coming from? That's a good question. I don't have a direct answer for that. I don't think it's going to be in the larger tech companies. I don't think it's going to be in that area. I don't think it's going to be in housing with the somewhat management of mortgage rates right now. I mean, maybe it could be in the biotech sector, some of these smaller pharmaceutical companies that clearly get pushed around pretty good up and down, with these waiting for FDA approvals on certain products. But that's a very good question. I just don't know where that next big bubble bust is going to be. We've had it obviously in housing. We've had it in tech in the 90s. But I'm not sure where that next one is going to be.
In relation to the bubble, what's the biggest change you see coming in 3 to 5 years in the market and business, just in American society in general?
I think with a new administration that's coming in, clearly, both parties have talked about the rules and regulations of many different industries, whether it's Wall Street, whether it's finance as far as banks are concerned, and mortgages as far as the pharmaceutical sector is concerned. So I think in the next 3 to 5 years, we're going to have some pretty poignant rules and regulations put in place that gives investors and gives the American people confidence when they're buying a home, confidence when they're buying a stock, confidence when they're taking certain medicines. I think we're going to definitely see some tightening around that, which would be overall beneficial across the board.
That's it for this installment of the Benzinga podcast. Happy trading.